Sasquatch is a podcast about Bigfoot. It's recorded for the skeptics, the believers, the so-called knowers, and those who just have a casual interest in the subject. Information, visit sasquatch.com. This is Sasquatch, a podcast about Bigfoot, and I am one of your hosts. My name is Seth Breedlove.
I'm Mark Matsky.
And tonight we're talking about a few different things. This will go down as the longest intro you'll ever hear on this show. It's going to be at least half the show taken up by the intro. The actual show itself will be about books and basically Bigfoot entertainment. This was a topic that was suggested by a listener of the show. And if you have a topic you'd like to hear us talk about, why don't you leave us a Facebook message and tell us what you want to hear us talk about. How you doing, Mark?
Oh, doing real well. We had a really cool experience this past weekend. We went down to the Mothman Festival in Point Pleasant, West Virginia. This was their 13th annual Mothman Festival. First time for us, although we had been to Point Pleasant in the past, and had a really, really good time because it's sort of, there's some crossover that happens down there where it's not only Mothman related, but all kinds of crypto is represented in the vendors area. And our buddies from Fathom Frontiers were there, and guys like Nick Redfern and Craig Woolheater were milling around, as well as Andrew Colvin, who's written a vast number of books on John Keel, Mothman, and some good Bigfoot stuff, too, that I wanted to tell you about. And we met the Turtle Man from Call of the Wild Man. That was pretty crazy. We didn't even know that he was going to be there. But
so you said he goes like regularly to this event. This is like a normal thing.
He's been there consecutive years. I don't know how many, maybe three or four at least. And his line was long all day. I mean, he was out there 5 hours at least, almost nonstop, signing stuff and taking pictures with people, and you know, feeling the love. I mean, there are people bringing him handmade items and things like that. So it was intense.
You were one. You knitted him a cardigan.
It has a turtle shell pattern on the back. I thought it was some of my beautiful. Best work, actually.
We're going to get to an interview you recorded live down at that event in a few minutes. But before we get to that, we had a few items to get through. First of all, we had a shout out. Why don't you give that?
Oh, yes. Our shout out is for our listener, Abby. And it was submitted by her dad, Joseph. Mm-hmm. And so, Abby, shout out to you from Sasquatch. We're so happy that you're a listener of ours. And keep on the search, okay? Thanks for listening.
Yeah, we love the fact that there are parents listening with their kids to the show. That's a big part of what we're doing here. And hopefully we're keeping it all ages friendly. You know, I know sometimes Mark can get a little, you know.
I know, you have to.
I have to mute out. Yeah. You guys wouldn't believe
it's an accountability
how much a
thing
is
okay,
actually cut out. Okay, so we gotta mention some other things here. We have a sightings episode coming up, and that should be next weekend, I believe. If you have had a sighting in the state of Ohio, you can submit that to us through sasquatchmail@gmail.com. I think that's our very professional sounding email address. We're going to talk about some more Ohio sightings. We had a big response to that episode, and I know people really like to hear about sightings, especially in the state, so we're going to go into some more Ohio sightings next week. So if you've had one, send it to us in the mail, or just leave a Facebook comment and we'll try to get in touch with you. The Yakima Bigfoot Roundup starting at the beginning of October. Sasquatch is going to donate some pieces to them for their auction, and so you'll be seeing some of that stuff pop up in your Facebook feed soon. But go to the Yakima Bigfoot Roundup Facebook page and give them a like, and if you're able to, go to the event because it sounds like it's going to be pretty awesome. It's something I've always wanted to go to.
You know, the thing that's so attractive about that is it's out there in the Great Northwest, which would be just fun to do in and of itself.
All right, now the big news. If you're friends with me on Facebook, I've been posting some pictures of t-shirts that Saswa is working on. Those will be available for pre-sale by tomorrow, which is, I don't even know what today is. So today is the September 21st. So they'll be available tomorrow, September 22nd, and those will be available for pre-sale for 2 weeks. So October 6th, the pre-sales on those will end. If you're wondering what the point of pre-sales are, it's basically so we can track how many sizes we need for people and so we don't over-order one type of size or under-order something else. So if you're wanting to order a t-shirt, those will be available for pre-order tomorrow. And the cool news is that we partnered with Grassman Gear, our friends Alan and Jesse at Grassman Gear, to actually sell these shirts. So you'll be able to go to grassmangear.com tomorrow and actually pre-order the shirts. I'll have pictures, I imagine, later today or tomorrow of the shirt on the Facebook page. So if you want to make sure you actually like the color and stuff beforehand, those will be up. And if you're wondering what the heck are these guys going to do with the vast amounts of money they will accrue from selling their shirts, it's all going back into the show. Everything would go back into paying, you know, hosting fees and helping grow the audience some more. So in case you're worried that we're trying to buy a Beamer with our millions of dollars of t-shirt money, it'll all go back into the show. So
we're going to buy a thermal.
Yeah.
A FLIR.
But it's not for Bigfooting. It's just for hanging out in the house. And thermaling things through walls. It's going to be great.
Thermal the deer and squirrels.
Yeah.
Outside.
Yeah.
There's one.
Yeah. So grassmangear.com, pre-sales for 2 weeks. Go on there and pre-order them if you can. That's what we'd prefer because, again, it'll be... Honestly, we have a set cap on how many t-shirts we're going to make as well. So if we hit that cap, there's going to be a cutoff point. These will definitely be a limited thing. We don't really want 1,000 Saswat shirts just lying around anyway.
So. Nobody does.
No, exactly.
No one does.
No one wants that.
Are there going to be different designs?
Okay, so
at some point,
possibly down the road, we got to see how well these sell. This is our basic logo designed by my lovely wife, Adrian. And it will say the name of the podcast. And then below that, it says a podcast about Bigfoot, which is what this is. Saswat is a podcast about Bigfoot. But there are other design ideas in the works. So if this goes well, we'll put out some limited runs and stuff like that is the thinking for the future. But for now, we're just going to put this up and see how it does. And it's basically an interesting way for us to get, you know, support from listeners and help support the show. You're helping spread the word about the show and you get a really cool t-shirt. So grassmangear.com and links and stuff will be available through the Facebook page and also saswat.com, which up till now we've been still on the Blogspot. So ignore that bit at the beginning of the show where I say saswat.com. Saswat.com will be going live eventually, hopefully the next couple of weeks. And that's where we'll be sending everyone instead of Podbean. That's where we're going to be sending everyone to actually listen to the show. But that's enough about pimping our shirts. Let's move on to your interview that you recorded live at Mothman Festival 2014.
This is Mark from Saswat. We are live at the Mothman Festival in Point Pleasant, West Virginia, and it's my pleasure to have a few minutes of Stan Gordon's time today. Stan has been researching all things unexplained for some time now and is the author of Really Mysterious Pennsylvania and one of my favorite books, Silent Invasion. I'm really glad to have the opportunity to talk to Stan Gordon.
Well, thanks for stopping by.
Yeah, you bet. If you wouldn't mind, what are some of the most recent Bigfoot reports that have come your way, and anything stick out in your mind as being really interesting?
Well, there have been, I've heard some reports from the wintertime this past year down in eastern Pennsylvania, and one of the reports was very interesting because it was during an extremely heavy snow, there have been some apparently some Bigfoot activity down there. And the one person tells me how, I believe the night before, they had encountered this creature with a foot and a half of snow. They live in, over in a mountainous area. And they could see the series of tracks. And the next morning when they went and followed the tracks, they suddenly stopped and disappeared. Which falls into what I've been dealing with on cases for years.
Yeah.
Especially during the 1970s. That's why I wrote the Silent Invasion book.
Right.
And you don't hear about it all the time. But I can tell you today, just from people coming around to myself and other researchers from different parts of the country, I'm hearing similar kind of stories. Mm-hmm. And as you listen to this, you realize that this very unusual aspect of Bigfoot is much more common than a lot of people know, or much more common than a lot of people want to know about.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you touched on that. An important point, I think, is some people just, if they receive a report like that where the tracks just run out, they'll throw it in the trash can because they don't want to deal with the very super unusual elements of that. Why do you think that is?
You know, a lot of people have their mindset as to what they want to believe in. A lot of people in the Bigfoot field are set in stone that Bigfoot is some type of unknown zoological specimen, some type of unknown primate, which I did myself for years and years. Had I not been out there doing the investigations, especially during the 70s, and had these cases come to our attention, it'd be very difficult for me to believe it myself. Mm-hmm. And then after having been in contact with many researchers for years and years throughout the country and many other countries, and learning of the fact that there's a lot of similarities all over the world of these type of cases going on, but Bigfoot researchers told me even back in the 70s that they were reluctant to publish it because they don't be laughed at by their peers. Mm-hmm. My position is I don't have the answers to what's going on, but because it's so unusual doesn't mean you should dismiss it. In fact, I've learned more and more that it might be those really unusual aspects of the case that might be much more important to look at than maybe other areas of it, because that might hold the key as to what we're dealing with.
Yeah, no doubt. And one of the type of reports that always surprises me, in a sense, is where somebody has, like, a look at a Bigfoot in their front door, or they shoot the Bigfoot or attempt to, and in a flash of light, the thing disappears or just like winks out.
It's a rarity, okay? It's a rarity. But some of those cases we had from 73 and 74 were very well documented.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, it started out with this massive outbreak in the summer of 1973, which started in southwest Pennsylvania but extended to many parts of the state. And my research groups were out there day and night responding to these cases as the police departments were getting calls to different agencies, referring a lot of the cases to our team to investigate. So we were all doing this around our regular jobs, but we were responding day and night. And we were on the scene within minutes to hours. That's why we could document this so well and so quickly. And we weren't out there looking for these kind of reports. This was, you know, back in those days, you didn't have a lot of TV shows dealing with UFOs and Bigfoot.
Right.
And these were people who were scared enough to call the state police and the police departments, okay? They just wanted answers like, what is this we saw? Why is this going on? Are these things dangerous?
Mm-hmm.
And as these reports are coming in, over a period of time, we begin to see a pattern somewhere. As we get a UFO sighting, then within minutes, the hours, the days later, you've got a UFO sighting, then you have a Bigfoot sighting, a UFO sighting.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had cases where you got a UFO and a Bigfoot, same time, same place, together. Like the October 25th, 73, the famous case in Fayette County outside of Uniontown, we had a multiple witness see this huge object appearing to land in a pasture. It's a big white hemisphere type object, mm-hmm. a big dome. It's illuminating the whole area. And while it's there, here's two Bigfoot creatures in the field at the same time.
Yeah.
And just to make the story short, this guy shooting at him with a 30-06, and he knows he's hitting these things, and they appear not to be injured whatsoever.
Right.
And they walk off back in the woods, and they run out of there and go home, got their family out of the farmhouse nearby, called the state police. And when the trooper arrived, he told me that the area where the thing had been resting was self-luminescent, glowing, about 100 feet, maybe 150 feet in diameter. Weird, weird stuff.
Yeah.
And then we had that really interesting case, February 6th of 74, up in the mountains near Ohio Pie, off in Fayette County. So here's a woman who's lived in the mountain all her life, deep in the mountains that night, sitting and watching television at a little cabin home. Here's this something, some kind of something going on her front porch. Something was banging around a pile of pop cans. Thought it was a pack of wild dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Thinks in her mind, you know what, I'll grab my shotgun and I'll scare the dogs away. Grabs her shotgun, loads one chamber. Basically, to make the story short, she goes, opens up the door to her porch, turns on the light. No dogs there, but just as, almost as close to her standing to me. Here's mm-hmm. this huge, hairy creature. And she never called it a Bigfoot, she said. It was a great big hairy ape. Okay. Had his arms straight over his head. And what does she do? She fires right into it. And she said there's this bright flash of light, like a strobe on a camera, and it disappears right in front of her. Mm-hmm. And then her son-in-law, 100 feet away, the family hears the gunshot, wants to know what's going on. They call her, and she tells them what happened. The son-in-law grabs his pistol, starts walking up towards her cabin, and is surrounded by four or five, what he said, like hairy people with eyes like coals of fire, starts shooting at her randomly. And at the same time, here's this large object, like a big crystal ornament, hovering over the woods. Mm. So that wasn't the only case. It indicated to us, and made us really begin to think, what is going on here? And that and other cases, for example, we would have incidents where teams would be out there investigating incident. We'd have trails of footprints that would just suddenly stop and disappear when there should have been more tracks. So we were seeing more and more evidence that suggested we're dealing with something that may not be a flesh and blood animal, but may indeed, for a better term, be something maybe interdimensional, mm-hmm. that we don't understand how it works or what it's all about, but under certain conditions, these things look physically solid. They leave physical evidence behind, and then they're gone. They appear, they disappear. Where do they come from? Where do they go? And it's not just with Bigfoot. I look into many other type of cryptid creatures in Pennsylvania, from the huge birds with their gigantic wingspans we call thunderbirds, mm-hmm. to Black Panther sightings, other weird creature reports like the humanoid with the wings tucked into its back a couple years ago up in Buster County, and all kind of weird stuff we hear about. It's the same thing. It's just like Mothman. He had this outbreak here in 1966. People see this winged creature with the glowing eyes, flying cars at, I guess, 100 miles an hour approximately.
Yeah.
So they see it for a period of time. While that's going on, there's UFO sightings going on around the area. You hear these stories of these strange, mysterious men mm-hmm. who question witnesses, other weird stuff going on, and then it stops. And that's just going. That's been going on for years, and it still goes on.
Right.
Okay, it's going on today in certain areas that I'm aware of. Mm-hmm. But people don't know about it because on private properties, and people are scared to death. They don't want everybody coming out around
exactly
the property.
Exactly right.
But there's more to this than any of us understand.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have the answers, but because the stuff is so strange, you should not be dismissing it. If you're an investigator, you should be looking at all these cases open-mindedly, gathering all the data. And unfortunately, that's not what's happening. But I've said for years and years, the phenomenon is so strange, it protects itself.
Hmm. Yeah, that's an interesting way to say it, really. And I appreciate, I'm not just blowing smoke here, but I really appreciate your approach, which has been, in my estimation, take the evidence as it comes, and now you have to deal with whatever you're dealing with. Even if you have to say, I have no idea what this is, then you, you know, then you make other research and decisions based off of that, but to come at it with a preconception, probably not a good idea, because then you're going to throw stuff out.
Right, and it's unfortunate because we know that still goes on today.
Yeah.
And even though I can tell you in more recent years, especially with the response to the Silent Invasion book, it's been getting a lot of good response from around the country and out of the country, and a lot of people in the Bigfoot field have called me confidentially or emailed me and said, you know what? We're so glad you did this. This is the same thing's going on in our area, but everybody's afraid to talk about it because they don't want to get involved in the controversy.
Yeah.
So there's more to this going on than we realize.
Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah.
And now, there's been a preponderance of three-toed tracks in Pennsylvania. Is that correct?
Well, you know, it was pretty prominent during that wave of 73 and the 74, and then periodically since.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But what a lot of people don't know is, around the country in areas like out in the Pacific Northwest and California, where there's a history of the standard three-toed or five-toed tracks, just like you have in Pennsylvania, they also report three-toed footprints, sometimes four-toed, mm-hmm. which this is another area I talk about in one of my presentations. There's a lot more to this strange aspect of Bigfoot. I mean, it's hard enough to believe you can have one unknown specimen running around, but they have several different ones, mm-hmm. which makes no sense unless there's something else we're dealing with. And I believe there is something else we're dealing
mm-hmm.
with. Okay. And what else is showing up in Pennsylvania? It's not here, just here, but it's showing up. And even in the last year, we're getting reports of pungent tracks or ape tracks in areas where you're getting Bigfoot activity.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you hear about this on occasion. So here you got another strange footprint. And they were being found during the 70s as well. But even in the last several months, you know, in the last six, within the last, let's put it this way. Last December, there was a case, which was a series of tracks in Westmoreland County found by hunters that mm-hmm. they couldn't identify. They called me out to investigate, and they're pondering tracks.
Yeah.
And it's strange and unusual.
Sure.
But do we have apes running around Pennsylvania, too? There's a lot of mystery here we just don't yeah. have answers for.
Right. Yeah. All right, Stan. One incident that I can't get out of my mind, this was in really mysterious Pennsylvania,
yeah.
is where Bigfoot acts in an aggressive manner. There's a baseball diamond, and there's, I think, two couples who see this Bigfoot kind of moving out from the woods and then across a baseball diamond.
Yeah, that's going back many, many
them.
Years. Yeah, okay. It was down in Newstead, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that typical of Pennsylvania reports where Bigfoot behaves in an aggressive manner?
Very
or
rarely.
Not really?
Because, yeah, and I don't think even in that case it really was really aggressive. I mean, as so many people said to me, they said, if this thing really wanted to hurt them, it could easily have done it.
Mm-hmm.
It could easily have outrun these people. Hunters have told me that. But they seem to be curious of people. They seem to be curious of human activity. They'll sometimes approach pretty close, but generally when they're seen, they turn around and run away.
Mm-hmm.
But cases of being dangerous, I mean, it's just something that's just not historically something we've seen.
Yeah. And it may be the same effect of seeing a mama bear out in the woods, and there's cubs there that she wants to protect.
Yeah, who's the
There's
say?
Some of that... behavior of the bluff charge or so, the alleged bluff charges.
Right.
That
even cases that I've had where people, I don't recommend shooting at them, but many people over the years have shot at them with all kind of weapons and nobody ever brought one down.
Right.
But even in cases where people have shot at them, they generally turn around and walk away.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In most cases.
All right.
Yeah.
So you are still actively investigating.
Oh, yeah. And we had an interesting case May 17th of this year. In Westmoreland County, an area that has a lot of history of sightings, outside of West Newton, Pennsylvania, it was dark, a little after 11 o'clock, and a man and his teenage daughter were riding down the road, and they saw, to the right, they saw a person stoop down on the right side of the road, which rose up, and suddenly turn around and walk right out in front of the road, right in front of their car, and the father's driving had to swerve to miss hitting it, thought it was a person at first, until he looked up and see this thing is covered with black fur mm-hmm. over the body. And what was very intriguing was, he said, it had glowing eyes.
Yeah.
Okay. And he said, as he's going down the right, he wanted to go back to look. His daughter was scared of that, so he didn't want to go back.
Right.
But he said, I looked in the rearview mirror, it's standing in the middle of the road looking toward it. And he said, I could still see those eyes glowing, but not as bright. So it wasn't any kind of reflection from the headlights, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no reflective light anywhere in that area.
Right. No eye shine. This
no
was
eye shine.
Something that was...
Something else.
Internal somehow.
Well... Whatever it is, it's not something that happens in all cases, but
mm-hmm.
there are very well-documented cases of what people describe as self-luminescent glowing eyes.
Yes, and different colors,
and
too.
Different colors, from orange to reddish-orange to green.
Yeah.
There's a lot of variations in them.
Mm-hmm.
And again, just like with the smell, there is not always that rotten egg sulfur-like smell, but in some cases there are.
Mm-hmm.
Other cases, there's no smell whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
And getting back to the interdimensional theory,
yes,
my theory is that the smell has nothing to do with hygiene or some type of protective device, but it has something to do with the process of going from your physical to your non-physical reality,
mm-hmm.
whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And isn't it like the sulfur is often attached to the description of that smell, which is...
Right. Sulfur, rotten eggs.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's just a lot of folkloric elements to that as well that you can play around with.
There's a lot of people that have their own theories and ideas,
mm-hmm.
and who am I to say who is right or wrong, but there is something out there that science has yet to prove.
Mm-hmm.
And with Bigfoot, after so many years and so much controversy, do I believe Bigfoot exists? Yes, but I'm not so sure anymore that it's what a lot of people think it really is.
Okay.
It might be something even much stranger.
Yeah.
But as we're looking more and more into new areas of science now, it might explain how this is possible to occur.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. The search continues.
The search right. continues. And I hope I live long enough to have an answer.
Yeah.
But I'm not so sure that's going to happen.
Well, let's hope so. Would you like to get out your information for us, please?
Sure. Well, my website is stangordon.info. My books are available on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com or through my website, Autographed. The books are Really Mysterious Pennsylvania and Solid Invasion, the Pennsylvania UFO Bigfoot Casebook.
All right. Stan Gordon, thank you very much for your time
today.
It's been a real pleasure.
All right. Thank you for
having
me.
Okay. Thanks.
All right, guys. was good talking to you again.
You too.
All right. That was great, Mark. Thanks for the interview while you were down there. Tell us a little bit about Stan and the festival and your experience with his books or book.
All right. Well, Stan is, the first thing I'll say about Stan is that he's just a genuine guy. And that goes a long way with me. There's no air of pretense with him. He's absolutely open about his research and where it's taken him. You never get a sense with him in speaking with him that he's holding out on you, like he's got some really good information, but he's not going to really give you the goods. He's just very forthright and appreciates people, I think, who are just open-minded and want to share reports with him. The thing that I really am so impressed about is how long he's been doing this for. While holding down a career in electronic sales of some sort, the whole time he has been doing this as a really a second career is what it became, and taking phone calls all hours of the day and night, and really searching those down. The one thing that he did mention, I believe there in the interview, is that he had a team of volunteers as well as himself, and they would get calls through this hotline, and within minutes or hours, they would be at the site of some of these encounters and sightings. So they were getting as much evidence as possible with as little time elapsed between the actual event and their research of it. So that's really interesting to me. Because there seems to be such a concentration of weird stuff going on in and around Westmoreland County, Pennsylvania. And they got to a point, and I believe they're still at that point, where they can pretty much have boots on the ground within hours, maybe a day or so goes by, but they're out there looking at stuff almost immediately. Stan's books are really, really interesting. They are eye-opening in the sense that he really holds nothing back. He's not interested in filtering out reports that he thinks are inconvenient or too strange to mention. And for that reason, his books, and especially Silent Invasion, which is where all of the Bigfoot and UFO stuff comes together, he just throws it out there and says, this is what people told us was happening in the 70s. And we went out there and checked it out, and we found tracks and talked to people who came across as very scared and frightened and credible. So all that's to say that he just strikes me as sincere, number one. Number two, he's methodical and very careful in his conclusions that he draws, or his refusal to draw conclusions, as the case may be. And I'm really drawn to his approach. So I was really, really thankful, very grateful for the generosity of his time at Mothman Festival, because, it was time he could have spent sitting at the table and selling books and DVDs, and he very kindly stepped aside and allowed me to talk to him for a while, so really appreciated that.
Yeah. Yeah, I was excited that you were able to get someone and actually, record some audio down there. I've always wanted to go to this festival. Got to be honest, Mothman Prophecies, the Richard Gere movie, saw that movie like four times in theaters. I adored that movie when it came out. Mm-hmm. And I still think great little underappreciated thriller. I just find it very creepy. Something about it. It's just very unsettling. Mm-hmm. And I know it's very different from the actual accounts of the Mothman situation, but I like it. It's a good movie.
Yeah. Well, the thing that you'd like then about the Mothman Museum is that there's an awful lot of props from the film. It was understandably a big deal for them to shoot a Hollywood production in and around that area. And it wasn't all shot in Point Pleasant, but parts of it were. And so you've got pieces of the Silver Bridge replica, which is really, that's the tragedy at the heart of this story, is that 46 people lost their lives in this bridge collapse that is portrayed in the film in a fictionalized way. But what the movie does is, I think it does a pretty good job of nailing the creepy atmosphere that was genuinely being felt at the time in 67 when John Keel was reporting these things, and Mary Heyer was
you know, writing about them in the Athens newspaper, and I don't know. Have you ever read the book?
I've read portions of the book. It's one of those. Yeah. Yeah. If I had the time, eventually I'd like to read it. But
yeah,
and I own it
because the sense you get is just how over the top, mm-hmm. weird things yeah. got in Point Pleasant. Yeah. I mean, just beyond anybody's idea of. You know, this isn't just one or two. A handful of sightings of some weird creature. There's all types of other
yeah.
phenomena associated with it that just was a, you know, if you were in the heart of that, you would have wondered if you were losing your mind.
Exactly.
And maybe that was the point. If it was some big operation, maybe that was somebody's idea of a
military
test of
experiment.
Some sort. I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah. And the stuff Stan says is interesting. I like those high strangeness, as they call it, high strangeness cases. I don't put mm-hmm. a ton of stock in a lot of it. I think what would be interesting to see is what the percentages of the high strangeness cases is, as opposed to the cases that are just people seeing a Bigfoot. I'd like to know, like, is it 1 in 100? Is it 1 in 50? You know, where someone sees a Bigfoot disappear, and I don't know. I find that stuff very interesting. I just it's also very perplexing. Very perplexing.
No yeah. doubt about it. No doubt. And I think that's partially why you hear him talk and you hear other researchers talk about the whole window idea, or the so-called flap, is that it helps explain why you would get weird stuff like this in one location and not mm-hmm. another. You know, why it would be a small, and I think Stan even has no problem saying this is a small percentage of the reports that come in, but in the case of what happened in 73 and so forth, I was just looking at this last night. I mean, over the course of a year, there were like 180 reports where Bigfoot yeah. was spotted in a fairly limited geographical location.
I mean, they just had the same thing happen. I mean, it wasn't on that scale. That's one of the biggest I've ever heard of. But there was a similar yeah. thing in the last few years down in Mohican. And I think actually that Mark talked about it on the last episode of Sasquatch, where they talked a little bit about the flap in the Mohican area. But we need to move on, because at this point we are just getting really late. I'm sure our listeners are loving this, though, because we're approaching the 1 hour mark. What we wanted to talk about this week is film, and we did not necessarily sit down and plot this out ahead of time, so it's just going to kind of be us rambling, I guess. Let's start with movies, though. At least we can start with one category and work our way through it. And I think what we could do here is talk fictional and documentary films that we happen to enjoy. We're not going to spend a ton of time on each one, but we want to talk a little bit about films that are relevant to the subject of Bigfoot, and they may or may not be great movies. But why don't you start us off? Talk a little bit about, you know, Bigfoot movies that you think are important.
Well, okay, we'll start with what I think you have to start with, which is The Legend of Boggy Creek.
Here in this primitive river bottom wilderness in southern Arkansas, along with deer, duck, crane, and beaver, lurks a creature that walks upright. Whether it is a man, a monster, or a myth, no one really knows. What we do know is the people around Falk, Arkansas, say they have seen such a creature nearly 250 times since 1954. And that this creature, whatever it is, emits one of the most terrifying sounds ever recorded.
My own journey to see that movie was rather long and drawn out, because I had read about it for years before I ever got the chance to see it. And finally, thanks to the wonderful technology of VHS, I was able to tape it off of Independence Station in Michigan, where I grew up. So after years of speculation and wondering about it, I finally got to see it, and it was worth every minute. It's justifiably a classic and probably held up as, you know, the Bigfoot movie of all Bigfoot movies at this point, and certainly has had the greatest influence on the largest amount of people as far as people who watched it as a young person, and that sort of propelled them into a true interest in the subject. And, you know, in Lauren Coleman's book, he has a list of at least 10 people who are fairly prominent Bigfoot researchers who really do cite Legend of Boggy Creek as one of the singular reasons why they're interested at all in
it seems looking like for Bigfoot everyone today. I know that's into Bigfooting at least has some, they call back to that movie as being something that got them into the subject. I know, you know, Mark DeWorth has mentioned it, and a lot of local researchers who I've spoken to, and obviously Lyle Blackburn with his Beast of Boggy Creek book, which we'll be getting into. And it is a shockingly well-made movie for what it is. I can't think of any other movie either that's been made that is similar. A lot of people compare it to the found footage films of today, but it's more like if you were, it's almost like that show that's on, I think it's Destination America or one of those channels, the Monsters and Mysteries in America, where it's basically just like a series of dramatized horror type scenes with these monsters. That's kind of what this movie is like. There's no one narrative just kind of carrying it through. It's just this story of this monster that's terrorizing this, you know, this town of Falk, Arkansas. And I've told you before about my love for the scenes that opening and close the movie. I love when the guy comes back to the farm after he's, you know, he's grown up, and he talks about wanting to hear the sound of the Boggy Creek monster again. And I love that stuff. So, I mean, there are parts of that movie that don't hold up well. There's some musical numbers that are a little out of place and Disney-fied. But as someone who did not see it, I've heard a lot of people who didn't grow up seeing it say that it hasn't aged well, but I actually think it's fine. I think it's fine for what it is. And you can appreciate it, especially as a Bigfoot aficionado, you can appreciate it for what it is.
Definitely. Well, when you consider all of the cases that came out in the 70s, it just captures that era so well. I think that's a strength and not a weakness, really. And there's so many vignettes within the film that work so well. Like, the scene that I love is the young boy who is, he's running through the woods with his gun because he thinks he's going to score a deer. And he kind of pauses, and the woods is sort of quiet, and then he hears his hunting dogs again, so he takes off. And he comes into sort of a little clearing, and the camera pans in such a way that you see just Bigfoot standing there in front of him. And to me, that's one of the greatest cinematic representations of Bigfoot, because you don't see a whole lot of detail, but it's a big creature. And of course, the kid shoots him, and the monster falls to his knees, which I just think is just a great
visual
cinematic touch. It's just such a great scene altogether, because you've got all that rush, and then it's quiet, and then boom, you see Bigfoot just standing there, the Falk monster. And it's kind of what I imagine it being like in my own mind, you know, never having a sighting.
Creature from Black Lake is another one that came out in that same era that seemed to draw a lot of inspiration from Boggy Creek. And you and I have talked a little bit about this movie because I just discovered it recently.
There's never been a report or an incident of this creature ever attacking or harming a human being.
Joe? Joe!
Yes. Very cheesy, but still, like Boggy Creek, it's an enjoyable monster movie. It kind of harkens back to those old black and white monster movies from the 1950s for me. You know, I love those old monster movies, and that's what this reminded me of when I saw it.
It's definitely in that tradition. There's no doubt. I think the big difference, obviously, between those two films that we've mentioned is that Legend of Boggy Creek claims some sort of docudrama middle ground, whereas Creature from Black Lake, it doesn't claim anything except to be a fictional buddy story about two Bigfoot hunters. And the fact that it doesn't take itself all that seriously actually makes the suspenseful parts more suspenseful.
And yeah, the main characters are likable, too.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they really are.
It's very 70s. It's a very 70s movie.
Super 70s, no doubt about it. Those guys are, they're like emblems of the 70s, really. Yeah. All those, the two main characters, the sheriff, Dub Taylor, who's the old grandpa, you know? And, yeah, it is. Just, it's like a time capsule of 70s Bigfoot ideas and Southern culture and everything all wrapped up together. And my understanding is that that was filmed in and around Caddo Lake, which Lyle Blackburn talks about in his book. That's not too far away from Sulphur River and Boggy Creek itself, stuff like that. So
yeah.
There, people watch the film and think, wow, it looks a lot like Boggy Creek. Well, there's a good reason for that. It was filmed in generally the same area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny. Seems like the two areas that are connected with Bigfoot in monster movies is the Pacific Northwest and then like the Deep South. I mean, we haven't seen I think there are actually Bigfoot movies set in like Ohio, but nothing worth mentioning really. You've talked a little bit about that Japanese, wasn't it? A Japanese movie?
Yeah.
Talk about indeed. That one, because I don't think our listeners know about that
yeah,
either.
Yeah, the American version was called Half Human, and much like the original Godzilla, it appeared in this country first in an Americanized form, which is to say they shot extra footage with, in this case, it was John Carradine as sort of a lead scientist talking about the discovery of the Japanese Yeti and that sort of thing. But the film really existed in an original form with no American actors whatsoever, and it was the same production team and even a lot of the same cast as the original Godzilla film. And it had some title like Monster Snowman or something of that nature. And the story is essentially there's a Japanese-style Bigfoot living in the Alps of Japan, where there's a lot of skiing going on. And about the first 10, 12 minutes of the film is people skiing, which is, you know, I guess it sort of lulls you into a sense of
security.
What could possibly go wrong. And then everything starts going wrong. But the thing that is really I like about this movie so much is that it's very dark in tone. I mean, the Bigfoot sort of stands as an emblem for nature and in fact does some altruistic things. It rescues somebody who's in peril, but when these circus showman type guys show up hunting for it, that's when, you know, everything starts to fall apart. And there is a junior Bigfoot that hangs around with Papa, and spoilers, something bad happens to the baby Bigfoot, and then Papa Bigfoot goes on a rampage after that. And it just doesn't end well. I mean, it paints a picture of humanity getting a hold of nature, and when they have bad intentions, then bad things are going to happen. But the thing that's so great about this film is the Bigfoot suit is just incredible. Toho special effects department was really on a roll there in the mid-50s because they came up with this suit that really holds up over many decades, because you know, inevitably I'm disappointed in Bigfoot movies when they reveal the creature. I don't know why, it just doesn't ever look like I think that it should. But in this film, it's not that far off of what I see in my imagination, and you know, for that reason there's a lot of collectible stuff that's out there still. It's not easy to get your hands on, but there's half-human Bigfoot model kits and stuff that are, and I think that's partly because the enduring quality of this particular suit. It really gets the whole, like, the heft and the size and the girth of a Bigfoot right. It's not too skinny, but it's not pot belly fat either. It's just really weird looking and distinctive.
1957's The Abominable Snowman of the Himalayas. This is a movie I have not yet seen in whole. I've seen parts of it. But this is a Hammer horror film that has... this is like Peter Cushing, right? And right. It's based loosely on Tom Slick, from what I've heard.
Mm-hmm.
Now, have you seen this one?
I have, but I think there's nothing about it that stands out in my mind as being like a penultimate Abominable Snowman movie.
See, I know one thing I love about it that I know I love about all Hammer horror films, and that's kind of the production design. I adore the backgrounds and the matte paintings and just the general production design on Hammer horror films is unbelievable. My mom got me hooked on Hammer horror films when I was a kid. It was about 13 or 14 years old with the Dracula movies, and that was around the time that I saw portions of this movie. So that's the only thing I really remember liking about it. But moving along, we have to move up to... we're going to skip some of this, the Lance Henriksen stuff we know. We know what's out there. And obviously, everyone knows about Harry and the Hendersons. Great movie. Probably the best Bigfoot movie, in my opinion. But I wanted to talk a little bit about Willow Creek. Just came out last year. Have you seen this yet?
I've only seen the trailer. Haven't seen it yet. It's on my list, though.
All right, I'm going to talk about it briefly. This was one I'd been looking forward to for quite a while, and I saw it as soon as it hit Amazon streaming. It's basically two movies. It's kind of an hour-long pseudo-documentary about Willow Creek and the Bluff Creek area and the community that surrounds it. And I like that movie a lot. I think it's entertaining. It's funny. It kind of has a tongue-in-cheek look at the Bigfoot community there. You know, they're like eating Bigfoot burgers and... very kitschy kind of, and then it becomes this whole other movie, which is absolutely terrifying for the last probably 25, 30 minutes. One thing I have to say that I love about this movie, it gets in, it does the job it sets out to do, and it gets out. There's no screwing around. It's not a 3 hour long, you know, horror movie. I want to say it's under an hour and a half. I'm not 100% sure that's true, but I thought that was a welcome change. I really enjoyed it when I watched it. I don't know that it's for everyone. Honestly, I think if you're a part of the community, you might enjoy it more than someone who isn't. Because the interplay between the main characters, the one is a skeptic, it's a guy and his girlfriend. And he is like a 100% believer and she's a skeptic. And the way she antagonizes him and stuff is really humorous and it's just really funny. I mean, it's bizarrely humorous for the first hour. It's essentially a comedy documentary. And then it just becomes this... I mean, there's a 20-minute horrific scene where they're in this tent just being played with by these Bigfoots. And I have to say, I went camping this past summer, and both times I went, I thought this scene was in my head the entire time I was camping. Wow. So.
Yeah. I mean, that really has been the main thing I've read about the movie is the long scene, and it's all one cut, right? Yeah,
and it shouldn't work, and it's weird because as you're watching it, you go back and forth between like, okay, this is not working. Okay, this is terrifying. This is really getting too old, and then it goes back to being terrifying. It's a very interesting scene. It works, and it doesn't work simultaneously, but I think in the end, it pulls it out. You know, it works. And overall, I really enjoyed the movie. I will say... there's no Bigfoot. You don't get to see a Bigfoot, which was disappointing. Okay. So
that's a Bobcat Goldthwait production, isn't it?
It is. It is indeed. Yeah. And I definitely would recommend that for, you know, if you're interested in the subject, you'll probably like it. I can't see people not liking it.
He really knows his stuff, too, from the interviews that I've heard of his.
Yeah.
And I guess that comes out in the film then, really. But.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought I liked it like quite a bit. I don't think it's my favorite Bigfoot movie, but it's one of the best that I've seen. But we can talk a little bit about documentaries and stuff, because I think there are so many. And if we decide to include TV shows, which I don't think we should do at this point, unless it's like what I'm saying is shows like Monster Quest, that's a TV show. Yes. The documentary that ran on like the Discovery Channels or... Bigfoot, the Definitive Guide, or the Sasquatch Legend Meets Science. Those I would still consider a documentary, even though they were on television. Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about some of those. I want to mention two right up front that I've seen very recently that I quite enjoyed. One is the, I just said it 2 seconds ago and now I completely forget, Sasquatch: The Legend Meets Science. Very good, very good movie. I actually felt that the documentary was much more interesting than the book, which I had a hard time getting through. The other one is Shooting Bigfoot, the documentary that was on the BBC about Biscardi and Dyer, and that got a bad rap in the community because it did make the community look not great. But I thought overall it was very entertaining, and it was an interesting look at a lot of wacky nut jobs.
Huh.
Did you see either of those?
Where is that available? Is that can you get that off?
I rented it on, I want to say Amazon, but I'm not 100% sure. It might have been Crackle or something like that. It was. I watched it on my PS3, so I know it was an internet streaming service that's available on PS3. The Sasquatch Legend Meets Science is often referred to as like one of the seminal documentary films. The other one that I love is called, has to do with Oklahoma. It's in Oklahoma near the Wichitas, which is also where Area is. Now I can't remember what it's called. Yeah, I want to say it was on the Travel Channel. I'll have to try and figure that out. Talk a little bit, and I'll scrunch up this information.
Yeah. Well, I will mention that I had the experience lately of, you know, remembering the In Search Of episodes with, you know, narrated by Leonard Nimoy. And
they believe he is as gentle as he is powerful and mysterious. He's been seen many times.
There's a generation, myself included, that remembers those pretty vividly. But this was a case where memory didn't really match up with the content, because I went back and watched them again. And they're just not as, I mean, Leonard Nimoy's narration pretty much makes that whole program go. But sort of the reenactments they did, candidly, I was kind of disappointed with. They weren't as scary as I remember them being, you know, as a 5 or 6 year old kid. And but they did a good job of giving you, I guess, the general picture, especially in the Pacific Northwest, of just what the terrain looked like. And that's one of the things as a kid I was most fascinated by, because I was, you know, around that time living in places like suburban Detroit and Fort Wayne, Indiana, which is a world away from the Pacific Northwest. So just seeing picture, you know, moving pictures of those type of places in the late 70s was kind of a big deal, because it really allowed your imagination to play around with that and to kind of say, you know, it does seem kind of reasonable that something could be hiding out there in woods like that.
The creepiest thing about those is the music.
Yeah.
Oh, and the movie, the documentary I was talking about, is called Bigfootville.
Oh, yeah.
If you haven't seen Bigfootville, it's one of the best television documentaries that there have been on the subject. Another one I saw recently was called Southern Fried Bigfoot. It had, again, a very, you know, swamp mod kind of focus, but very interesting look at the subject. And it was refreshingly, I guess it wasn't over dramatized. You know, you just kind of got the impression that this was a very focused documentary. It wasn't crazy.
Who produced that?
Welcome
who was,
to the South.
Kind of the driving
it has
force
its own
behind that.
Traits.
I can't remember. I followed him on Twitter.
Way of life.
Thanks for throwing
and
that.
According to
I should have looked up the information at a time. That would require me to be organized.
There's a perception that the Sasquatch or Bigfoot occurs only
what else
in the Pacific Northwest. But there are also
a lot
of reports from other parts of the U.S., especially
the
South.
There's
Bigfoot
a whole
in the South does exist.
Well, there was
there's
the
a trail of evidence
Peter
here
Graves
from tracks,
one that was
sightings,
man-like
First
monsters,
Nation traditions,
like that.
Smell.
Maybe I'm thinking of something
that
else.
Really point
yes.
to
Bigfoot. That's the Marks one, right?
Bigfoot. That
yeah.
is the quintessential
yes.
hairy
and then,
monster.
Oh, yeah.
Every southern state has reported yeah. Bigfoot type creatures, whether they're called a booger, a paint, a devil, yeah. a bush ape.
Well, and another, you know,
you
in that same vein, this
down,
was not a documentary,
perception
but it was
like
definitely a 70s movie. I think it was just called Sasquatch.
Many of
the
reports
the
were
poster
describing
just
an
had
animal
the
essentially
kind of
identical
iconic
as the reports from
shadow of
Northwest.
Sasquatch
large,
standing on a ridgeline. And this one is the reason I liked this one so much as a kid, and I still like it a lot, is that it sort of fulfills this.
An upright figure.
It's a, like a wish fulfillment deal where you head out on an expedition, and you know you've got all these different personalities, and you've got a Native American guy, the photographer, and the skeptic, and they're out there to put out like some type of electronic sensor system so that they can monitor this area and see if Bigfoot, you know, trips the wire. And you've got scenes of sort of arbitrary wildlife, like a mountain lion jumps out of a tree and attacks a horse. And it's just, it's pure 70s, really. And I like it for that reason. And there's some flashback things. I think they do a Ape Canyon reenactment and stuff like that. And it's, like a lot of the 70s films, they're very judicious in actually not showing Bigfoot that much. Or if you do get it, it's like a glimpse of his side or going into some woods real quickly, just shadowy. And I like that a lot because, like I said before, there's a lot of reveals that happen in more modern Bigfoot films, and it's just like, nah, that's not it.
Yeah, and part of what makes Bigfoot mm-hmm. interesting is the mystery. When you're throwing him right out there on the screen, mm-hmm. you know, it kind of takes that away. Join the conversation at facebook.com/sasswhat. Find us on Twitter by using the hashtag sasswhat, or you can find me on Twitter at Seth Breeds Love. Mark Matsky is on Twitter at Reverend Matsky. Send your letters to sasswhatmail@gmail.com and leave us a rating and review on iTunes.